what's up? You're listening to 91.7 The Wuss.
No, dude. Those are call letters. It's W-H-U-S.
Yeah, but it sounds cooler when you say it like The Wuss.
Hey everybody, welcome to WHUS 91.7 Stores. My name is the Reverend Brian Blair, and I am here with you on Crossroads, the show where every week we ask our guests to talk about the intersection of their faith life and their everyday life. We have two wonderful guests on today, two professors here at UConn. We've got John Beauvais and Wei Zhang. Hello to you both.
Hello.
How are you guys today? Very good.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to ask you, just make sure you're about an inch away from the mic so we could hear you. And before we get to our guests today, I got a couple of announcements, everybody. First of all, you could always check out the show later on if you can't tune in right now at 1:30. If you go to revblair.com, you can watch it on YouTube, and you can also check it out on the podcast. You can check me out at Twitter. So if you'd like to make a comment about the show, just follow me at Rev Blair on Twitter. We got a great event I want to advertise that is going to benefit a local charity organization, WAIM, Wyndham Area Interfaith Ministry. If you like beer, come on down to the Hop Fest on April 29th. Check that out online and see what that's about. Anybody who participates, your donation will go to WAIM and other local charitable organizations. And I also want to give John a second here. He's got something to plug. John, what's this about looking for farmers?
Sure. So I am in the process of developing a series of studies on the costs of producing fruit and vegetables in Connecticut. So I have been in touch with a few farmers about the costs of growing vegetables and looking for more. So if you are a farmer who's growing vegetables and listening to this show and you'd like to participate in a UConn study that could help benefit you and other farmers in the area, you can contact me by email. My email address is john.bove@ucon.edu. My first name is J-O-H-N and my last name is B as in boy, O, V as in Victor, A-Y.
Thanks very much. Sounds great. Let's get to it. How about, Wei, we ask you first, you're an economics professor, yes?
Yes, I'm an assistant professor of economics at Connecticut College. I'm a visiting scholar here at UConn.
Very good. Tell us what you do as an economics professor, both here at UConn and in the other school where you teach.
So my field is environmental economics. I do research and I teach issues related to pollution in general. So and also pollution control policies.
And as a, here at UConn, are you teaching any classes right now?
Not now. I'm full time conducting research.
Oh, research.
Yeah.
Is there anything you're researching right now?
So actually, I have a very exciting project going on that studies this so-called Environmental Quality Incentives Program. That's the largest program in the U.S. It's a voluntary program for agricultural farmers to adopt conservation practices to reduce their environmental impacts to the nature. Yeah.
All right, John. By the way, everybody. I should have introduced them both as a married couple, which I thought was a fun way to do a show. John and Wei are married, and they're both economics professors here at UConn. So I thought that was a great idea for a fun show. So John, as Wei's better half over there. No, I should say that's the opposite. You're the better half, right, Wei? John, what do you do here at UConn?
I'm an assistant professor of agricultural and resource economics, and I'm also an extension economist. So in lieu of some of my teaching responsibilities, I provide outreach and extension services, educating Connecticut's farmers, consumers, policymakers, and really everybody about the economics of agriculture and ways that Connecticut's agricultural industry can be more economically healthy.
If I were a UConn student, how would I know you?
Okay, sure. So I teach a class for juniors primarily. It's a 3,000-level class on business management with a heavy emphasis on sustainability in agricultural and food businesses. So so it's sort of it's a good balance between my research interests and what a lot of students are interested in. And more as I talk with farmers and business owners, sustainability is becoming an important topic. As we look forward, try to understand how businesses can be sustainable, how our resources can be conserved. As people think about social obligations, sustainability is really important.
That is an interesting term to use, social obligations. I'm sure we're going to get back around to that as we talk today. Wei, how did you become an economist?
So first of all, I'm just very much interested in the environmental issues. Since when I was a little, I always wanted to study pollution. And then in college, I took some economics classes, and I feel economics is a good tool to study pollution and pollution policies, because economics teaches us to think about trade-offs. We think about the costs and the benefits. Nothing is free. We want to reduce pollution, but we want to reduce pollution in the least cost way. So I think that's why I got into environmental economics.
You use the term trade-offs, and the first place my mind goes is now we're talking ethics. So just very quickly, because we're going to get to John, ask him how he became an economist. Do you think that there is an ethical component to what you do?
Yes, definitely. So in economics, we talk about there is normative economics and there is positive economics. Some of what we do in terms of positive economics is more like facts. Gathering information, gathering facts. But in terms of normative economics, we think about trade-offs and we think about the costs and benefits, the ethics of things.
Very good.
Yeah.
I think we're going to wind up circling around back to that one too. John, how about you? How did you become an economist?
My road to economics may not have been quite as straightforward as Wei's. I think that I became interested initially in economics because of a course I took my sophomore year as an elective. It was called Introduction to Poverty Studies, and it was actually taught by a Methodist minister
Wow.
who also had a PhD in ethics, I believe. He had taught a number of classes over his decades in the profession, Harlan Beckley. He was really a mentor to me, and his course inspired me to think more about what I could do for society. And it also introduced me for the first time to using economic reasoning and concepts such as the trade-offs that Wei just mentioned to suggest how society may benefit from certain strategies for certain policy strategies for poverty reduction.
And to think more about the ethics too.
Excuse me.
Say that five times fast. So that sounds like a wonderful introduction. And so that really inspired you to continue. And do you think that you've brought some of what you learned from that class into how you practice as an economist and the classes you teach and the direction that you go?
I suppose so, at least subconsciously. It's been a long time since I've reviewed the materials from that course.
Uh-huh.
But when I think about sustainability, I should define it for the listeners and for everybody. A pretty commonly accepted definition of sustainability is that economic viability must be ensured in the long run while protecting the environment and natural resources and demonstrating some kind of commitment to society, to social welfare. And so the social welfare component is obviously really closely connected with some of the issues we studied in that class. For example, are farm workers being paid enough so that they can take care of themselves? Can they can afford a nutritious enough diet and adequate housing? So that's just one issue, and that's one way that that class informs what I think about in my professional life today.
So are you saying that we're supposed to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time? Is that what's... That's
yes,
pretty,
that is what I'm saying.
Okay. This show asks our guests to wonder about how their faith life intersects with their everyday life. You've given us a little bit about what you do with your everyday life. Wei, how would you consider yourself to be a person of faith?
Yes, I'm a person of faith, and I think, you know, sometimes I can get busy. I forgot about I'm a Christian and how being a Christian should affect my decision making in my work life and everyday life. But I try to bring myself back at least once in a while.
So you would define yourself as a Christian?
Of course.
Are you a practicing Christian?
Yes, I'm a practicing Christian. I'm actually a member of the vestry at St. Mark's.
St. Mark's Episcopal Chapel? You mean that place with that priest?
Yes.
I've heard of that place. All right, so you would consider yourself an Episcopalian at least these days?
Yes, definitely. Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry about that. All right, so you're an Episcopalian. How long have you been Christian?
I have been a Christian for over 10 years, and I got baptized in 2006.
Now, you're from China.
Right. So I grew up, of course, like not a Christian, but I became aware of this concept of Christian faith and Christian practice through movies, actually.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Can you think of any movies now?
And in particular, like Hong Kong movies. I watched Hong Kong movies. I saw other people going to church and praying. So, yeah, I became interested. And then after I came to the U.S., and I started attending a non-denominational Chinese church in Amherst, Massachusetts. And then I just got baptized very soon.
Okay, so you became a Christian really once you arrived in America.
Yeah.
But you learned about Christianity a little bit through movies that were created in Hong Kong.
Yes.
Okay, all right. John, how about you? How would you consider yourself to be a person of faith?
Well, like Wei, I'm a member of St. Mark's. I have been fairly faithful for most of my life. I was brought up in a Presbyterian church in Gainesville, Florida. And there were some years around college when I wasn't attending church regularly. But ethics and moral concerns were always very important to me. And one of my best friends from college is a minister now. And I never strayed too far from my faith, I think. But after Wei and I started dating, she encouraged me to attend church with her. At that point, she was attending a Baptist church in California. And I attended church with her. And within a month, I decided that I was fully committed to leading a Christian life again. And it was very special for us to be attending that church together. The pastor was leading a 9-month study of the Gospel of Mark.
Wow.
At that time, and I started attending right at the beginning, I think. Like, I think it was January to September, and I started attending in January. So I really got an intense study.
That is intense. Yeah. That's like a seminary class. Right. I mean, that's the shortest gospel right there. Wow.
Yeah.
So you went full on right into it, and mm-hmm. you've been steadily practicing ever since.
Yes.
So how about you, Wei? How would you say your faith, being a person of faith, informs either, well, let's say for you, you became a Christian once you were here in America, but you had been an economist before you got here, or at least were going to school, right?
Yes.
So you, but So your decision to become an economist might not be informed by your faith, but certainly there's ethics involved with the branch of economics, if I could say that, that you've chosen. How do you think as a person of faith, your faith has informed your approach, your decisions?
Right. I think that's particularly relevant for my current position as a professor, but I teach and I also do research. Right. So there is a trade-off of how I allocate my time between teaching and doing research. I think my Christian faith has been the guiding principle for me there. And on one side, I want to be a good teacher because it's very important to let the next generation learn economics. But teaching is not as valued in academia as doing research. I also want to preserve my time to do research, to be a good researcher. And so sometimes I have some conflicts in my heart how to allocate my time. I try to ask myself as a Christian, and I want to demonstrate love to the people around me, and I should be more committed how like to allocate my time right to teach effectively, to be a good teacher. I think that's one of the things. Yeah.
Do you bring that into the classroom? I mean, I know overtly one shouldn't really be talking about their faith life in front of a room full of students unless you're in a particular school where that's okay. But certainly how we approach people and what we do, how do you think that that works itself into your classroom?
One thing I decided to do is I try to pray at least every time before I go into a classroom, before I have office hours, so that I will be patient, I will be kind to other people. That's a goal I set for myself before I became a professor. I haven't been really doing it so, you know, religiously all the time, but I try to think about it all the time.
So you're concerned with things like patience and compassion and things like that, and that's fed by your faith and vice versa.
Yeah.
That's nice. John, how about you?
How my faith affects what I do in my professional life? Well, I think it kind of comes back, circles back to just thinking about how economics can be used to inform public policy for the social good. And those principles that I started thinking about now 15 years ago when I took that class as an undergrad on poverty studies. And in addition, I mean, I think it can be a challenge, no matter what your profession is, to be patient and kind and always considerate and forgiving to people with whom one interacts. And so that's something that I strive to do better, to be more compassionate towards others. And this is something that's obviously an integral part of our faith.
You know, you bring that up and you started this with a kind of an ad for trying to get farmers so that you can collect data. Am I describing that correctly?
Yes.
So you work with farmers. And so what's behind all that? Why do you need to work with farmers?
Right. So so academics sometimes wear a few different hats. We are educators. We educate undergraduates and graduate students in the classroom, in the halls of the university buildings. We do an original research that we share with other academics in our profession and in our narrow fields. We do service, which involves things like organizing conferences and serving on committees on campus. And in addition to all of that, some of us engage in public outreach. For me, ever since I started studying economics seriously, it's been important to connect with people outside of academia who aren't either students or fellow professors. And so to that end, one of my outreach programs in Connecticut is to provide information to farmers that may be useful as they are thinking about how they may be able to do farming better. And so this study that I put in a little plug for earlier would provide information to farmers about how they can grow fruit and vegetables. And I'll break it down looking at various individual crops more profitably, how they can do things that are more cost efficient and make sure that they're using the best practices and so that they can remain competitive.
So part of what's in that answer is this idea of statistics and figures, data. You guys deal with data a lot, right,
yes,
as economists. What would you want to share with people about the importance of managing data, collecting it, using it?
Sure. So we talked a little bit earlier today, Brian, about how as a discipline, economists have found themselves, I think, struggling to use data consistently. There are pressures put on us to show results in our data analysis that are statistically significant in order to publish papers. If you were to say there's no statistically significant relationship between these two variables I'm looking at, people might say, well, that's not an interesting result. You're telling me that there's no effect, that your hypothesis isn't confirmed or denied. It's just there's no relationship. Uh-huh. That's not a publishable paper. So there is some pressure to try different ways of analyzing the data until you can demonstrate a statistically significant result. There are also more subtle and even accidental choices we can make that affect whether our results read one way or another. And we talked earlier, just to give a concrete example, one common question in economics is how the minimum wage affects employment, i.e. social welfare. And so some economists say that with minimum wage increases, social welfare will improve because there won't be a negative effect on employment and more workers will make a higher minimum wage. And other economists say that higher minimum wage will lead to decreases in employment and that'll be social welfare reducing. Mm-hmm. And so there may be choices you can make that affect how your study of that particular question, which direction that effect is going, whether it's social welfare improving or social welfare reducing. And those may be subconscious or conscious choices, but a lot of it is buried and it's sort of known only to the economist. And so we have to think a lot about ethics and to make sure that we're doing things transparently and in best faith when we're analyzing data for our research papers that each of us write and that all the other economists, I mean, they ought to be considering ethics when they write papers, at least.
Well, two things pop into my mind. The devil is in the details.
Sure.
Couldn't help say that one. And then also the importance of who has and who controls information is essential.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Wei, have you ever come across a situation where it's important to understand and manage information properly so that you can produce ethical results or just manage the information in an ethical way?
I think so. I think just as John mentioned, it's very difficult to publish non-significant results, right? So one of my most important papers that studied the cost of environmental air quality regulation in California.
Uh-huh.
So actually, my results demonstrate that this particular regulation didn't affect the cost of production for dairy farms so much. You can see, like, it didn't affect the cost, right? That's a non-significant result. People probably will feel more like excited about, oh, it actually increased the cost a lot, right? So I struggled somewhat to get the results out to publish, but I think it was an opportunity. It asked me to dig deeper to think about, like, it didn't increase the cost. Why? Right? Is it because certain things farmers did, or like actually this particular piece of regulation increased some costs, some labor costs maybe, but on the other hand, reduced a material cost, Right. So I had to make decisions to dig a little bit deeper, spend more time collecting more data to understand the behavioral changes there for farmers. So, yeah.
Is this the famous poop paper?
Yeah, our family, we refer to this paper as the cow poop paper. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the whole thing about balance. And I hear a lot of that in what you guys are saying, like the trade-offs and the balance. So a lot of what I hear you guys talking about is ethics. Do they ask people in economics classes, if you're a major in economics, to take ethics courses? Do either of you ever teach them, or have you ever had to take them?
That's a very good question. I don't think so. Right now, we don't have that. But in our profession, actually, there is this big discussion, right, about our professional conduct. And actually, this morning, we received the results from a so-called the environment survey of the economics profession.
Mm.
Yeah, our major organization did this survey last year. And now there is a preliminary report release. And in the summer, there will be a complete report so in this report you'll learn like things, issues related to ethics and the professional conducts in our profession.
Have you come across anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a discussion on ethics in the profession, and as Wei said, we all the members of the American Economic Association received this email this morning with some links to information about the preliminary results of this survey that they conducted around the new year on climate, ethics, professional conduct, and related issues.
Well, one thing I think is related to all that is we're here at UConn, and I understand that this is a land-grant school.
Right.
And I wonder if you guys could explain what that is.
Sure. So, without having any references in front of me, in general terms, I'll say that in 1862, President Lincoln signed a bill that has guaranteed, for the most part, funding to universities in each state across the country, and also gave them land, hence the name land-grant universities, so that the U.S. would remain always at the forefront of agricultural research, and so that we would have, a safe and healthy and affordable food supply, that our farmers would remain in business. And so this has ensured that there are faculty in each state who are conducting research, teaching undergrads and graduate students, and also engaging in outreach and extension around the mission of agricultural viability. It doesn't just hold for the states that were part of the Union in 1862, but there are campuses, I believe, in all 50 states that are land grant universities, and UConn is Connecticut's land grant university. We have I think over 100 faculty in the College of Agriculture, Health, and Natural Resources who are devoted to this mission.
You know, what it sounds like to me, we were talking a little bit about ethics and economics, and it sounds like the fact that this is a land-grant university, ethics is baked into the university itself. Like, it has to comply with certain regulations, receiving funding and land from the federal government. You guys are here to make sure that things are being taught the way that they're being taught. So just the fact that Lincoln got the ball rolling on this, and UConn is part of that whole system of land-grant universities, to me, even without having to get into a thorough discussion around ethics, it's almost unavoidable that the university can't operate in an ethical manner in all things that it does. And that's one of the things I get being partnered with the university as a church on campus, but yet not being part of the university. My sense since I've been here is that there is an ethical component to almost everything the university does, whether it's stated, up front, or you just get the subtle idea that it has to comply with certain ethical guidelines. We already ran out of time.
Wow.
Yeah, I really had fun having you guys on. I hope you guys had fun too. I really appreciate all your comments. I think it was very valuable to hear about farming in the region, sustainability, air pollution, what it is like to be a professor, how you guys got here. Maybe we'll invite you guys back to talk about all the things we couldn't get through today. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Everybody, this is WHUS Storrs, Connecticut, 91.7 FM. I'm the Reverend Brian Blair. We had our wonderful guests today, John Beauvais and Wei Zhang, two economists here at UConn. This is Crossroads, the show where we ask our guests about the intersection of their faith life and their everyday life. Thanks, John and Wei.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Try to flag a ride down to the crossroads. Try to flag a ride, but it seems to know me. Everybody passed me by. Did you know one?
I liked it.
You found me lost, left me like